Chapter 11, Let's Talk Turkey by Willie Snow Etheridge. 11, Ankara Antics. The next morning, the ambassador rushed the roommate, Bill Baxter, Lucky Roosevelt, who was our fellow house guest, and me to an imposing hilltop where the new embassy had just been completed. Hundreds of feet below it spreads the whole new city of Ankara. "Just look at it," Mr. Wadsworth cried. 28 years ago, it was a village of 28,000 people. Now, just 28 years later, it is a city of 280,000. In recognition of this amazing growth, or perhaps just to use the thousands of dollars we, the United States taxpayers, that is, had impounded in Turkey, we have built the biggest embassy it has ever been my misfortune to run through. The ambassador never gives a body time to walk. It has three floors, counting a basement which houses a full-size movie and a recreation room for the young, a bar and storage space sufficient to stack the back issues of the New York Times. Somebody in charge of furnishing embassies for the State Department was at the moment in London buying and shipping lovely old pieces for the entrance hall or the reception salon or, well, where. Mr. Wadsworth wasn't sure, but he intended to be sure before any of it was finally placed. He has a flair for decorating and loves to try the pieces as they arrive, first in one place and then another, and he makes all of his visitors and friends help him move them and advise him. Now that I think of it, I'm sure we must have looked pretty silly that morning moving one of the console tables from wall to wall while a liveried servant with a tray of martinis followed at our heels. The martinis were intended as a pickup before the ambassador's and the roommate's lunch. They were supposed to leave on the stroke of noon with General Arnold to view the annual maneuvers of the Turkish army about 40 miles from Ankara. But the business of finding the right spot for the right piece of furniture was so engrossing that the ambassador forgot about time until the general's jeep came tearing up the driveway. Then, suddenly, there was the ambassador running as fleetly as a quarterback across the long reception salon towards the kitchen, yelling for lunch. Mademoiselle had prepared it at the old embassy and sent it, ready to be served, to the new, and in the bat of an eyelash it was on the table, two bowls of soup and a salad made of pork and beans and tuna fish. Between fast bites, the ambassador declared pork and beans and tuna fish were an excellent combination, and the roommate agreed with him, but for once it was not difficult for me to sit around and watch other people eat. When they were off in clouds of white dust, Bill, Lucky, and I rolled down the hill, picked up friends of Bill's named Lamson, and headed for a real lunch at Ankara's most famous restaurant, Karpiç's. We did take time out, though, on the main boulevard to peer up at a magnificent monument to Ataturk. For the night before, it had been defaced, and the Turks were really excited about it. The supposition was that the damage had been done by a religious fanatic who resented Ataturk's religious reforms. In addition to disestablishing the Muslim faith as a state religion and forbidding polygamy, as a roommate had told Mr. Big and me on our first afternoons in Istanbul, he also abolished the wearing of religious robes in public, outlawed two extreme Muslim sects, and the howling and whirling dervishes, those I would like to have seen, provided for civil rather than religious marriages, did away with religious qualifications for holding office, and cut off an army of Muslim leaders from state payrolls. Having taken note of the minor scratches about the hilt of the sword, we proceeded to the restaurant. It is run by a white Russian named Karpiç, and though it is huge, it is packed every day with innumerable Turks and people of at least a dozen other nationalities. The babble of foreign tongues is terrific. During the last World War, when Turkey remained neutral until the Allies announced that no country that hadn't fought would be allowed to sit at the peace table, Karpiç's was a hotbed of intrigue. Americans and British sat at tables next to Nazis and Italians and danced side by side to the music of a Romanian orchestra. Karpich himself was the greatest diplomat of all, I was told. If one evening he gave a bouquet to an Allied beauty, the next evening he gave one to an Axis belle. Naturally, not qualifying under either of these headings, I didn't get a bouquet, but I did get a lunch so rich in rice-stuffed vegetables and swordfish kebab that instead of going sightseeing with Mrs. Lampson as Bill had planned, I returned to the embassy, curled up my hair and my toes, and read Turkey, Old and New by Selma Ekrem until the ambassador and the roommate returned from maneuvers. They were both in a glow over the Turkish army, the roommate especially so. I never saw such nonchalance of bravery or foolhardiness as I witnessed this afternoon, he declared excitedly. Let me tell you what happened. Go right ahead. The maneuvers involved a problem combining artillery, air, tanks, and infantry with the burden upon the infantry, he began meticulously. Well, the infantry was advancing in three files before deploying into battle line, while the Air Force and the artillery were pounding a position ahead of them. A shell fell short about halfway between two of the marching files. Had it hit either file, it would have killed 20 or 30 soldiers. As it was, the shell hit a soft rock and threw up a great shower of earth and rock. Everybody grabbed his glasses to see how many casualties there were. The roommate paused to heighten my suspense and then went on. Fortunately, there were none. But no Turkish soldier had broken ranks. All of them were marching on as if death had not brushed them. I was sorry I'd missed this moving sight, but about 20 hours later, I did get around to seeing some sights myself. Kind Mrs. Lampson was still available. We began with the new city of Ankara and then climbed a high hill where the ancient village of Ankara still exists, seemingly oblivious to the new westernized city far below it. The old city centers about an open-air bazaar where the fruits, vegetables, and cloth goods are piled on the ground and merchants sit cross-legged waiting for customers. At the peak of the hill towers, a fortress fashioned of mammoth blocks. At the peak of the hill towers, a fortress fashioned of mammoth blocks of stone. To enter it, we squeezed through a gateway guarded by two crouching lions, carved, so Mrs. Lampson thought, by the Hittites who occupied this land of Anatolia centuries before the Turks. I vaguely remember the Hittites are in the Bible, but I can't remember what they were up to. Nothing good, I imagine. Still, the present-day Turks seem to be pleased that the Hittites occupied this area long before their own time. In an imposing airy museum built on the site of the ancient marketplace, there were many ugly, massive figures and pieces of Hittite architecture painstakingly restored and attractively displayed. From the museum, Mrs. Lampson and I drove to the remains of a Roman temple built by Emperor Augustus, literally in the year 1. Are so close thereabouts there is no sense quibbling over it. Augustus lived from 63 BC to 14 AD, as you no doubt remember, but I, feeble-minded as I am, had to look him up in the encyclopedia. He extended, to quote the encyclopedia because I can't say it well, and confirmed the Roman Empire in every direction. No matter how long I would have searched my brain for the exact right word, I never would have come up with that confirmed, and I do like it too. On the wall of the temple at Ankara is one of the many testaments that Augustus carved throughout the empire, setting forth, that's the encyclopedia's influence, his achievements. This one, in both Latin and Greek, is said to be the longest and best preserved of any in existence, and I didn't get to see it, which is just as well, for I couldn't have read it anyway. And the reason I didn't get to see it was so much more interesting than seeing it. The Muslims have turned this old Roman pagan temple into a mosque, of all things, and they were holding their Friday services in it. There, in the midst of the broken but still beautifully proportioned columns, no roof above their heads, 100 or more Muslims were hearkening to the Sabbath images of their leader. And, incongruity upon incongruity, the sermon was amplified over a loudspeaker attached to one of the 2,000-year-old columns. On another column close by nested a stork and her newborn young. End of chapter 11.